This is our second lecture on that mysterious individual by the name of Melchizedek, who appears in Genesis chapter number, say it, class?
14.
Thank you. And he gets tons of references throughout Genesis. Is that correct?
No.
Three verses.
Maybe you should just be quiet today, buddy, since you weren't here yesterday, okay? How many verses, Justin?
Two.
Three verses. He suddenly appears and then disappears. He comes on the scene, and it's as fast as he's on the scene, he's gone. What city is he from?
Salem.
Very good. Who does he bless?
Abraham.
What do they have together?
Bread
and wine. What is Abraham coming back from when he links up with Melchizedek?
Rescuing Lot.
Very good. Rescuing Lot. And the king of Sodom is mentioned, and then the king of Salem, and then right back to this king of Sodom. It's very interesting. Just almost a parenthetical reference there. What is unique that Abraham does back with the Melchizedek?
He gives him the tenth of all the spoils from...
Right, the tenth of the spoils from what?
The raid
in which he rescued Lot. Do we find any more references of Melchizedek in the book of Genesis?
No.
All right, we find our next Old Testament reference where?
Psalm 110.
The opening verse of Psalm 110 is unique because we have whom talking to whom, Angel?
God talking to basically God. The Lord is talking to the Lord.
The Lord is talking to the Lord, and we're wondering what is that all about? And it seems to clearly indicate the pre-existence of whom?
Jesus Christ.
Of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, right. And we find in verse number 4 that this Lord, who's sitting on the right hand of the Father, waiting until all his enemies have been made his what?
Footstool.
Is a priest after what, Jillian? A priest after the order of? The order of Melchizedek. He is, in fact, a priest after the order of Melchizedek. Now, we said that was unique because typically in the Jewish faith, in the Old Testament, if you were to be a priest, Mr. Kaiser, where were you a descendant of? Miles?
The Levites.
Right, the Levites, right. The first being whom, JJ? The first high priest being whom?
Aaron
the Levite, the first high priest. Mr. Davis, where did those priests work at? They worked at the tabernacle. And what was the primary thing that occurred at the tabernacle on a daily basis?
Sacrifices
were offered to God as a temporary atonement for what?
The sins
of the people. And those priests would work on a regular and consistent basis at the tabernacle in a rotational basis. And the rest of the tribes of Israel would give to them food and that which was needed for them to live. And now we have Abraham giving tithes to Melchizedek. We complete our Old Testament study of it. Now we move to what book to look at the New Testament?
Hebrews.
And we find that he is mentioned in 3 chapters, 5, 6, and 7. Let's look at 7 in this part 2, chapter 7. Chapter 7 contains most of our references to Melchizedek. Chapter 7 contains most of our references. We're going to begin with verse number 1. Jack, if you could read it real loud.
For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him.
So the important reference here is that this Melchizedek blessed Abraham. The response in verse number 10 is that to him, Melchizedek, Abraham gave a tenth part of everything. Notice now, he is first by translation of his name. You want to underline this in your Bible. We're looking at verse number 2 of chapter number 7 in the book of Hebrews. King of what?
Righteousness.
Righteousness, and then he is also king of Salem, and that is the king of
peace.
We read in verse 3, he is without father or mother or genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but resembling the Son of God, he continues a priest forever. Now that verse number 3 is an amazing verse and has led to all kinds of speculation as to who Melchizedek is. There are basically two possibilities, two options that I want you to commit to memory. Option number one is a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. A pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. Okay, let's hold off. Mr. Davis, what do we mean by pre-incarnate? Pre-incarnate. What do we mean by pre-incarnate? The word pre is obviously what?
Before.
Before. Excellent. And what do we mean by the word incarnate?
Flesh. He came up with flesh.
Yeah. Came what? What did you say, Mr. White?
In the flesh. Putting a body.
Yes. Taking on flesh. So when was the incarnation of Christ, Justin? When was the incarnation of Christ?
When Jesus was born.
Yes, his birth. The incarnation is his birth. So when we say pre-incarnate, what are we making reference to?
Before his birth.
Anything that happened with Christ before his birth. Now, why would anyone surmise that this could be a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ? Why would anyone surmise that this could be a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ? Mr. Norton?
Because he said he has no mother and father, and he said he lives on forever.
He's living forever. He has neither father nor mother. He has neither beginning. You have something more than that?
Well, it says he was the king of Salem. It could also be translated as Jerusalem.
Right. Right?
He says he'll be a priest continually.
He'll be what? A priest?
Continually.
Yeah, continually a priest.
He's the king of peace. Jesus lost the king of peace.
Right, right. So there's lots of references that seem to validate this idea right here. Certainly. Anyone else have what you think the second option may be?
Human.
Yes, this is a legitimate human. This is a legitimate human. That is to say, not a mysterious character, but there was a king in Salem. And then, so then, what is the logical question? If I insist that this was a human being, what are you then going to ask me based on what you just read?
How was he made? Like, who made him?
Right. Right. What else?
How's he living forever?
Okay, how's he living forever? Right. What else?
How did he survive?
Okay, how do you survive the flood? Anyone else?
What makes him so special?
What makes him so special? Very good. Anyone else?
Is he Adam coming back?
Is he Adam coming back? So lots of questions. It could very well be that this is a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. But I don't think so. That's not my opinion. But it could be. I could be absolutely wrong. I could be completely wrong. I think, on the contrary, that what we have going on here is that the Lord God Almighty creates this individual, puts him in Salem, gives him the guidance to leave Salem, to go and link up with Abraham, to bless Abraham, and then go back to Salem and finish his life. And I believe what's going on here is that having no father or mother, genealogy, and continuing forever is a reference to the way he's presented in the narrative. What do you mean by in the narrative? What in the world am I talking about? In the story. In what story?
This story.
What story? What story in particular? What book in particular?
Genesis 14.
Genesis, right. So Dylan, what I'm saying, right, is I'm saying that if you study the whole Bible, you can't find his mother. You study the whole Bible, you can't find his father. It doesn't mean that he didn't have a father. It doesn't mean that he didn't have a mother. It means that the author intentionally does not present that information to create a mysterious appearance, to create a person who doesn't have a beginning, who doesn't have an end, who doesn't have a mother, who doesn't have a father. This is what an author might often do in a mystery. He just brings in a character, and then as fast as the character's in, the character's out. And you, the reader, are going, where did he come from? Who was his father? Who was his mother? What was his occupation? And you're left wondering about that kind of stuff. It's not that he doesn't have a father, it doesn't have a mother. It's that the author of the mystery chooses not to include that data to present to you, the reader, the illusion that that's all there is.
Could he have been an angel?
Of course he could be an angel. Sure, that's a third possibility. Sure. But the difficulty of making him an angel is the importance of Jesus being a priest after the order of Melchizedek. And so he can't be after an angel because the book of Hebrews makes him higher than an angel. So to me, the option that best works is a human who was at the time a priest and in the Genesis narrative has no beginning and no end. Now, how would the Genesis narrative give him a beginning and an end? How would it?
Telling his birth, telling when he died.
Right. That's it. He would just say, this is when he was born, and this is how he died. Now, we learned that about Abraham, we learned that about Noah, we learned that about Adam. We have a beginning, we have an end. We know about fathers and mothers. How do we know about fathers and mothers in the book of Genesis?
Genealogies.
The genealogies. They tell us everything we need to know. But can we find any genealogical information about Abraham, about Melchizedek in Genesis? The answer is no. He comes on and off the scene. Mr. Norton. What's that?
Yeah, what do you mean by
that? The author is drawing a parallel. He wants you to compare that to them. He wants you to see that in the same way Melchizedek was a priest of the Most High God, the King of Salem, the King of Righteousness, the King of Peace,
oh, right.
Jesus is the same way. He wants you to draw that, Mr. Sturm.
Another reason why he couldn't be the pre-incarnate appearance of Christ is because in the following verses, like 11, he starts to compare him to Jesus, so he can't be Jesus compared to Jesus.
Right, so that's the follow-on point that we want to make. Anyone who argues that it is a pre-incarnate appearance loses the after an order of himself. He's a priest after himself. So he has to be a legitimate person in my estimation. Let's look at the verses in particular that Mr. Sturm was making reference to. Verse 4, Sal, read it right, nice and loud for the microphone. And keep reading.
Okay.
Verse 4, chapter 7.
Oh, yeah. Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. Keep reading. And verily, they that are of the sons of Levi, who receive the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take the tithe on the people according to the law, that is, of their brethren, for they come under the law of Abraham. But he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham, and blessed them that had the promises. Without all contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. Near men that die receive tithes, but there he received them, of whom is witness that he liveth. And as I may say so, Levi also who receiveth tithes, paid tithes in Abraham. For he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him.
All right, let me read that to you in the ESV. It's a little bit clearer. Just listen and do your best to stay awake and listen. So see how great this man was to whom Abraham, the patriarch, gave a tenth of the spoils. Verse 4. What's the author's point? What's he doing in that simple verse?
Trying to show how great he is.
Who? How great who is?
Melchizedek.
Because how do we know he's great, Jillian? How do we know that Melchizedek is great? Jillian, how do we know he's great? What magnifies the greatness of Melchizedek? Mr. Davis.
He's without father. Before.
I'll come back to you on this one, next one. One more time.
Without father or mother or genuine.
Yes, but in verse 4, Jillian, tell us, in verse 4, what's the greatness?
It says that he was so great that Abraham gave him a tenth of his spoils.
Yeah, it's even Abraham. What's this idea of like even Abraham? What's the author's point with that expression, that kind of an idea? Mr. Peek.
Abraham was father of Jews. They held him up very high.
Right, so I mean, he's like ultimate. Right, and so then he's up there with Moses and David, and then what are they saying then about Melchizedek?
Abraham. Even Abraham.
He's up there with them.
He's not.
He's what?
Up there with them. If you say even, like, oh, he even gave this, it's kind of like he's not even.
If the single greatest patriarch of the Jewish faith is giving someone else a tithe, what does that do with that person? Of course it makes it higher. It elevates him to even a greater status. All right, verse 5. Listen. And those descendants of Levi. What do we mean by those descendants of Levi? What is that expression?
Priests.
The priest, right. Who received the priestly office have a commandment in the law to take what? Tithes from who?
The people.
From the people. And then he goes on to clarify, that is, from their who?
Brothers.
Their brothers. What does he mean by their brothers?
Descendants.
The other tribes, right, exactly. The other tribes. But this man, who does not have his descendants from men, from them, received tithes from Abraham. This man, who is in verse 6? Who's this man? Verse 6.
Melchizedek.
It's Melchizedek. But Melchizedek, who does not have his descendant from whom?
Abraham.
From Levi, right, because that's the comparison he's making. This man receives tithes from Abraham, and then what did this man do?
Blessed him who had.
Okay, what are the promises that Abraham had?
The covenant with Christ.
Let's go over. There's four of them. What were they?
The land.
The land.
A great name.
Great name, and one more.
Blessings.
Blessings. So he had the four promises. And so we would think Abraham would be doing the blessing. So who is this man that's so elevated that he can be blessing the one? That's Melchizedek. Now, why is the author of Hebrews going out of his way to magnify who Melchizedek is? Why is he building such a strong case to build Melchizedek up into this amazing guy? Why is he doing all that work?
That's the order that Jesus created.
Right, exactly, Angel. Because if I take, let me go to the dry erase board for our listener. If I, in fact, put Abraham on the dry erase board, and then after Abraham, I got to go to Isaac, and then after Isaac, I got to go to who?
Jacob.
And then from there, I can go down to Levi, right? As one of the 12 sons. Everyone tracking?
Yes, sir.
Right? Okay. I say this guy right here, this guy, four generations above, gave tithes to this man who was, who am I going to put here?
Melchizedek.
All right. Melchizedek. I don't know how to spell it myself. I have to study the night before the quiz, too. Melchizedek. All right? Now we're going to say that Christ doesn't trace his priestly lineage over to here, to Levi. Christ traced his priestly lineage where?
Melchizedek.
Bypassing
Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
All the way over to here. So, every time I magnify this guy, I'm magnifying whom?
Jesus.
Christ. Just by default.
We don't even know who this guy is. And he's like elevating this Christ.
The author is. The author's not questioning at all who he is. The author believes beyond a doubt that there was a real man who appeared to Abraham, blessed him, they had wine and bread together, and sent him on his way.
Well, because this happened in Genesis. So So he had the Old Testament only for this when he wrote this, whoever this was. So.
So the author of Hebrews is fully familiar with the story in Genesis 14. And God the Holy Spirit leads him through Psalm 110 and Genesis 14 to build this entire case to show every Jew how great Christ is. That Christ is not a priest after the order of Levi. Christ is a priest after the order of Melchizedek. So I'm going to ask your parents tonight which one Christ is in order of, and see how many of them know. Engage your parents tonight. Ask them, Christ is a priest after what order? Is he a priest after the order of Aaron? Because why can't he be a priest after the order of Aaron? Justin, why can't he be a priest after the order of Levi?
Because he was not Levi.
Right, but why couldn't he have been there? What is the other thing that he also must be, and that creates the conflict?
The King of Job.
He what?
The King of Job. The
Mr. Norton.
He was born from the tribe of Judah.
He was born from the tribe. Why was it imperative that he's born from the tribe of Judah?
So he could be the King of Israel.
What's that? Say it.
Davidic covenant.
Because of the Davidic covenant. Our focus right now has been on what covenant?
Abrahamic.
Okay. We're going to eventually get to the Davidic covenant. Does anyone remember the Davidic covenant? Anyone remember the Davidic covenant? Mr. Peek?
The Davidic covenant was... Wasn't it...
I thought you were telling me.
I am.
Okay.
It
nice
was
and loud.
Isaac?
Nope. No, it's called the Davidic covenant. Okay. Mr. Norton?
It was telling David that Jesus would be in his...
Doesn't mention Jesus. But you're on the right track. You're just not being specific enough. Anyone? Sal, you remember? What's that?
His line moved forever.
Yes. Yeah, the Davidic covenant was the promise that God gave to King David that you would have a descendant that rules on the throne in Jerusalem.
He builds a temple.
And so if he's got to be a descendant of David, how can he be of the tribe of Levi? You can't be of two tribes. You're either the tribe of Levi or you're the tribe of
Judah.
Judah, right. And we say Judah because that's where David drew his lineage from. And so then we're answering the question, well, what kind of priest is he? Because all we know about is priests that come from the Levitic order. So what order is he after? To which the answer is the order of Melchizedek. Well, what kind of priest is that? That's a priest who has neither beginning nor end. That's a priest who has neither father nor mother. That's a priest that lives forever. How does it live forever? How does it live forever?
There's no end to the story in the Bible.
How does it live forever?
Through Jesus.
Through Jesus. Exactly. Melchizedek is dead. He's dead. He's physically dead. Like Abraham, like Isaac, like Jacob, like David. How does it then live? Through Christ. Through Christ. That's how it lives. Let's see if we can continue reading. It is beyond dispute that the inferior is blessed by the superior. What does it mean by that? It is beyond dispute that the inferior is blessed by the superior. What does that mean? It is... Miles, what does that mean? I'll just listen. Just look at me and listen. One more time. It is verse 7. It is beyond dispute. The inferior is blessed by the superior. What does he mean by that? It is beyond dispute. The inferior is blessed by the superior.
Showing that Melchizedek is better than Abraham.
Right. But what does that expression mean? Because you're right. But what does that expression mean? All right, let's change the subject. Who gets to establish the will and where everything's going? Does the Son do that or does the Father do that?
The Father.
The Father. Why?
Because
he's superior. He's superior. So if you had five boys in a house and the youngest boy said, now let me just get everyone together in a family meeting, this is the youngest boy. I want to let you know, this is what you're getting, and this is what you're getting, and Dad's sitting in the room. Is that going to go over very well?
No.
Who gets to decide where everything's going?
The man.
The superior does. And so the author is saying, it's always like that. It's always the superior, and it was the superior, Melchizedek, who blessed who?
Abraham.
All right, verse number 8. In the one case, tithes are received by mortal men, but in the other case, by the one of whom it is testified that he lives. One might even say that Levi himself, who receives tithes, paid tithes through Abraham, for he was still in the loins of his ancestor when Melchizedek met him. Now, this is a very, very unique idea. Go back to our board. He is saying here that Levi actually gave tithes to Melchizedek. How? How did Levi give tithes to Melchizedek? Through Abraham. Because he was in his what?
Loins.
In his loins. In his loins. Because he was a descendant. Because he was a descendant of Abraham, he was in his loins. Why is he showing? I know this is complicated. I got it. I'm teaching you something very complicated. Why is he showing us that Levi gave tithes to Melchizedek?
To put up Christ higher, because if Levi's giving tithes to Melchizedek, Melchizedek's order is better than Levi's.
That's right. Why is it important? That's exactly right. Why is it important that Melchizedek's order is better than Levi's order to a Jew? To a Jew.
He's using the lineage of David.
Okay, but why is he trying to build the case that Christ's order is better than the Levi order to a Jew? Remember, it's the book of Hebrews. Hebrews is written to whom? Hebrews. Hebrews is another name for Jew. So he's writing to Jews. What's he trying to get them to do? Abandon their faith in what? The Levitical priesthood, and put their faith in what?
Jesus Christ.
Jesus as their priest. Forget about those priests. I got a better priesthood for you. You got a better priesthood? Seriously? You think you got a better priesthood? You better show us how you got a better priesthood. All right? I'll show you. Levi, through Abraham, gave tithes to Melchizedek, and Christ is a priest after that order, not the Levi order. That's why it's better. You better abandon your loyalty to that priesthood and embrace Christ. Basically, the author of Hebrews is trying to evangelize who?
Jews.
The Jews. And the way he's trying to evangelize them is showing them that Christ is better than that. Better than that. This is not any different than if you had a Muslim friend on Facebook and you're trying to get them to leave Muhammad and embrace Christ. Somehow you got to show them how Christ is better than who? Muhammad. And all the author of Hebrews is doing is trying to show these Jews how Jesus is better than Aaron. Now, why am I saying Aaron? Because he's the first high priest, and every other priest has been after that order right there. So that's the important thing. Look at verse 17 and then we'll be done. 15 and through 17. This becomes even more evident when another priest arises in the likeness of Melchizedek. Another priest arises in the likeness of Melchizedek, who has become a priest not on the basis of the legal requirement. What's the legal requirement?
The law.
The law. And what's the law say? You got to be descendant of
Levi.
But by the power of an indestructible life. Now, what in the world is the power of an indestructible life? What is he making reference to with an indestructible life?
The
The what?
Cut.
No, not the, the, no. An indestructible life.
An endless life.
An endless life. The, it, what does he mean by an indestructible life?
Body not destroyed by sin.
What did they try to do to Christ?
To kill him.
They tried to kill him. They tried to destruct him. They tried to destroy him. They tried. How did he prove that he had an don't move. How did he prove that he had an indestructible life?
He rose from the dead.
If you try to kill me, Sal, you shoot me. I fall down dead for 5 minutes and then get back up. What do you think? What do you think? What's your reaction to that?
Zombie.
All right, you shoot me again. I get right back up. You're going to go, that guy is indestructible. That's exactly what the resurrection verified, that he had an indestructible life. You're dismissed.